magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Dutch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends, Eli, Jared, and Mike most of the time. Come on, let's go to the Dutch Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what is up? Welcome to the Touch Arcade Show, episode number 415, super spooky Friday the 13th edition. We're on the final countdown, the last five episodes before episode 420, which is we're going to quit, we're going to drop the mics and just walk away, and you'll never hear from either of us ever again.
That's right.
Or we might just keep going, I don't know.
Well, no, I thought we established that it's season one of the podcast. Oh. 420
episodes. Well, yeah, we'll start the numbering system over again. Season 2, episode 1. Yeah, I don't see like, any reason beyond 420.
Like Serial and all those other podcasts.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So, thank you so much for joining us. This is the Touch Arcade Show, where we kind of wrap up all the big news of the week in the world of mobile gaming and stories that we posted on toucharcade.com, the world's number one website for mobile gaming, Switch gaming, and just general shenanigans.
Can I talk about World of Warcraft? Is that allowed? Can this be a PC gaming podcast too today?
We can talk a little bit of World of Warcraft. I'll just tune you out when you talk.
All right, yeah, take a nap. I'll text you when it's time for you to wake up. WoW Classic's a thing. It's going to be huge. It's so I guess to set the scene, World of Warcraft came out about 15 years ago now. I was like mega... Yes. I've always been like an MMO guy, like Ultima Online was my game, like, and before that I was really into MUDs and stuff, so like these kind of games have always really appealed to me. So World of Warcraft, when it came out, I fucking loved it, played it for years, and then like a lot of games that are kind of like operated as a service, it I don't know, like it kind of run out of steam after a while, right? Like you can only release like so many expansion packs and stuff like that before you're just kind of like, okay, well, and particularly in like a game like World of Warcraft, where every expansion pack has like this like ultimate world boss sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So like, for instance, in like the Warcraft PC game, so Warcraft 1 through 3, like Warcraft 3 ends with like Arthas as like the ultimate bad guy of the entire universe, right?
Okay.
So two expansions in, you kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like, they're on like expansion like 8 now.
And so they like, just have to make it up as they go or whatever.
Yeah, and that's it's kind of the problem is like they sort of are just like making it up as they go, and like the lore has gotten all fucked up because like in order to make stuff like kind of sort of make sense, like some of the expansions like take place in the past, which is weird and dumb. And but even crazier is that like, so like now the top level is like 120 or 130 or something insane like that. And if you're that level, like you can just walk into like Arthas's dungeon and just like auto attack him and he dies.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So I don't know. The whole thing just got weird. But WoW Classic is like the World of Warcraft as it existed like on launch day in 2004 or whatever, which is like so fucking cool to go back to and stuff. And I just like can't get enough of it. Like a lot of my friends from back in the day are playing again and doing all sorts of zany shit. If anyone follows me on Twitter, you saw highlights of this like crazy huge PvP raid I ran. We had like 200 people fucking up the opposing faction.
Yeah, it seems like you're a troll at heart, and so your enjoyment from games like this is just griefing other players.
Basically, yeah. I mean, if you go to the best part about my WoW guild is I wrote this copy like it's crazy to go back to now because I wrote this site like 12 years ago, but it's just wowgoons.com. And I got the idea of like so Goon Squad as it exists in World of Warcraft is a troll guild more or less. So the website, I modeled it after like a free to play game. So like when people want to join the guild, we send them to wowgoons.com. And the first thing it gives you is this like JavaScript popped up. It's like, you're not a paying member. Click OK to proceed to the payment page. And then like the whole site is like all these different tiers that you can buy to get into the guild. And like each tier gives you like a like different access to like loot and gold and like all this other stuff. And this is like an evergreen thing that has been pissing people off for like 10 years.
Yeah.
So
That's awesome.
Really fun. I don't know. WoW Classic, I can't get enough of it. If you're into that kind of dumb shit, I hope you're having fun too. So anyway, just wanted to mention that.
Golden age of bringing back games from back in the day.
Yeah, for real.
Because they have nowhere left to go anymore.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Anyway, patreon.com/touch arcade, amazon.com, or sorry, toucharcade.com/amazon. Did we mention those already?
I did not. I interrupted you. For doing that. I guess my quick off topic is that I'm selling my Dreamcast collection in celebration of the 20 year anniversary of the Dreamcast, which simultaneously breaks my heart. And also, I hadn't even hooked up my Dreamcast in like a few years.
Dude, speaking of which, you know what I saw on Twitter a couple days ago? Fred of Lambier, I think his Twitter name is like That's My Trunks or something like that. Posted this thing. You can so if you really want to get fucking crazy with the Dreamcast, you can rip the games, like your physical discs, with a CD-ROM drive or DVD or whatever format
GD
the disc
ROMs,
is, to a ROM file, and then put that on an SD card, and there's this little like piece of kit that apparently it's just like a drop-in replacement for the actual like laser, like so the like the little ribbon cable comes out of like the CD-ROM like laser thing, and this replaces like that. You disconnect that ribbon cable and connect it to this thing, and then it reads the games off the SD card. That's and it's cool. supposed to like make the games like load like system breaking fast.
Yeah, the load is not great with the discs, and it's loud as hell. It's so funny to fire it up because it's like very, very, very loud. But it's sad because the Dreamcast was might be my top three system for sure. It's just it was like the last gamer system, I still feel, because I feel like after that was the PS2 and stuff, which I guess maybe the GameCube was in there too. But I feel like video game consoles became like technology products or whatever, you know what I mean, instead of just like fun gaming systems.
I
feel like the Dreamcast is the last one that was just like, hey, we're a video game system and that's it. And also we have like bananas, crazy game ideas and we're going to just release them. And everything got real safe after the Dreamcast went out. So
The Dreamcast, I actually didn't buy when it came out originally. Like I ended up buying one like used off a friend like years later who had like all the games and everything for like $100 or something. And like a lot of really good shit on there.
There is. And I have a pretty choice collection, and I'm popping off with notifications right now, but I have about 30 games and I'm up over $1,000 in bids so far for various ones. So
wow, so you got it on eBay?
Yeah. Looking to
so if I want to part with it, if I want to pull it up on eBay, what do I search for? Jared's Hot Collection.
Sacto Guy 916 is my name that I created in 2003 and regretted. But
how do you spell that?
Yeah, they're popping up. SACTOGUY 916, dog. But it is very bittersweet because, like I said, I hadn't played it in a long time, just kind of sitting in my shelf in my entertainment center. And, you know, it's better that somebody gets use out of them and then I can get a little baby money in return. And, yeah, it's probably good all around. My next big sell is going to be my NES collection, which I probably have about 100 carts.
Oh, my God.
From the NES, which most of them are just kind of whatever, but I have a few that they'll probably fetch some pretty good money.
Oh, yeah. Shit. You listed these individually. Damn. Holy shit. Yeah. These are going for $100 plus, some of these?
A few of them, yeah. Oh, like I said, God. Crazy rare Japanese import, very hard to get Dreamcast games.
This is insane.
And then I'll actually list my actual Dreamcast system, too, which I have the arcade stick for, which is another thing that's very hard to come across.
Power Stone 2, $81 with 9 bids?
Yeah, and there's still 3 days left on all the auctions, and I feel like they're going to go kind of nuts in the last few minutes like they usually do. So
this is insane.
Yeah, probably better than taking up space on my shelf. So,
but Street it is Fighter 2X for matching service, Japanese, $115.50 with 18 bids.
That game is bananas hard to get.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
All right.
So anyway, rip my Dreamcast collection. I guess, you know, 20 years and... say farewell to you.
That's cool. Well, you know, it's one of those things like, would you rather have $1,000 in your pocket or some shit in a box in your basement?
I got so much stuff to play, and it's very fighting game heavy, and I don't really have anyone that's going to come over and play Dreamcast fighting games with me anymore, and you can only play the computer so much, so
I can't even believe that stuff like Mortal Kombat is going for like $19.49 right now. That seems crazy.
Or like Soul Calibur is like the easiest Dreamcast game to get. And I think it's up to like $20 or something like that, which seems crazy.
Dude,
so.
I wish I could go back in time and just like stand at the doors of Funko Land back in the day and be like, do not trade this shit in for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, I know.
What are you doing?
Yeah. I've made some bad decisions like that when I was a kid.
Yeah, fuck. That's
trading every video game system I owned for a Jaguar was probably top of the list.
Oh my god. Well, that's cool, dude. I'm glad that it's going so well. That's neat. Very rarely do I hear stories from people who are like, "Oh yeah, I kept all this stuff and now I'm selling it for a ton of money." Usually it's like like me, it's like, "Oh yeah, I traded 18 games in to get like Super Mario World."
Right. Yeah.
And now all those are worth like $100 a piece.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what I'm up to lately. I'll let you know next week. I should know how everything ends, and so we'll see what the final total ends up being.
Well, I feel like we should race through some of these early stories because it's kind of Kind of want to talk about the new iPhone and stuff at the end. So
this first story was that kind of an out of left field surprise, but Cave, the bullet hell shooter company, decided to up and update four of their games for mobile, which they all died in the 32-bit apocalypse. Back in the day, like 2010, 2011, the Cave shoot 'em ups were some of the most popular games around because a lot of them hadn't, you know, you couldn't play really anywhere else. Cave is kind of this niche thing, and they're really, really good games, and they played super well on the touchscreen, and they were all paid. They sold for like $8 or $9 new, and I remember people bitching like crazy about how expensive they were back in the day.
But it was cool though, because
look where we're at now.
Like, weren't a lot of those like really only playable in like weird Japanese like arcade machines?
Sometimes, or sometimes on you could only import them on a certain console or something like that. Like, they definitely weren't as readily accessible as something that you can just download on your phone out of thin air. So it was like really remarkable at the time. And they lived a pretty long and healthy life, but Cave themselves kind of has done some restructuring over the years, and they weren't the hugest company to begin with or whatever. I think at one point they completely dipped out of mobile development altogether. And then when the 32-bit requirements came up, then all these games pretty much died or whatever. Yeah. I never expected them to come back. So it's kind of cool that Cave sort of resurrected themselves and then resurrected just four of their, I think, like 8 or 9 different games. It'd be cool if they went back and did their whole library, but I don't know if that'll actually happen. And then the other weird thing about this is that, so they're updated for 64-bit, and then they're more or less updated for full screen, although they're very fixed aspect ratio pixel art games. So you can't really make them all the way full screen because they'll stretch and look ugly, and it's not designed that way and whatever. Yeah. So it has border art, which, you know, either you can accept that or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, but on a couple of them, it's really weird because the border art doesn't have touch capability, which is kind of like the whole point of even adding full screen support, right? Even if there's border art, at least you can move your thumb over that spot and it's not like your ship stops moving or whatever. Well, for whatever reason, a couple of these games, that's the case. And I think it might be an accident that they'll fix, but whatever the case, four Cave games are now back in the mix. And they're still super fun. I mean, played through them.
It might be one of those things too, where they just like really wanted to use like a quick pass to get these games running again. Like, I with Game Club stuff, like some of the games we updated, like we could have done like a real quick shitty job just getting them working again, but like getting them working well is like a whole different ball of wax. So
Well, I feel like if they're going to go through all the trouble to release these updates and make a stink about it, that they're not just going to be like, oh well, the updates are half broken, we'll just leave it that way.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
So we'll see. I feel like that they'll fix them up and make them a little more proper and hopefully update their other games too. But just happy to see them still alive more than anything.
Yeah, for sure. That's cool.
This is Tokyo Game Show is going on this week, and Sean is there. So we should have some stuff from the actual convention maybe this weekend or next week. But one of the announcements was that Monster Rancher from the original PlayStation is getting ported to Switch and iOS. As a premium game, it seems, too. So far, it's only listed for release in Japan, but I think it will come to the West as well. In Japan, it's known as Monster Farm. But anyway, this is just a funny coincidence because last week we were just talking about those games where you could scan barcodes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Generate monsters or whatever. Sure. And Monster Rancher was sort of like that back in the the crazy, bold new world of CD-ROM gaming, you could actually pop the lid open on your PlayStation and put different, like, music CDs and whatever else CDs you could find in the system, and it would read the data and generate a monster out of it. So it's kind of like the same sort of idea. Apparently, the way it's going to work with iOS is that it will read songs in your music library or something like that to generate monsters. So it's still kind of keeping that spirit alive.
But the problem is you're the only person I know that keeps music on their device.
I know. Maybe it'll work with Spotify or something.
Although I wonder, have you, I don't know. I don't even know what would still use this, but I wonder if Apple Music uses like all the same like API hooks as like the actual just like iPod app. And I wonder if this, like, as far as the game is concerned, asks your phone for music and your phone can return Apple Music just as easily as it can.
So there, I know for a fact there's been a couple rhythm games that use your music library that were compatible with Apple Music, and I think even Spotify and stuff. So I think it's definitely possible. And I think if they're going to go this route, you kind of have to do that because there's only so many dinosaurs like me that have music files on their phone.
Yeah, I you are seriously the only person I know that still does that.
Yeah.
Of all the people I know that have
that flag proudly.
Yeah.
But yeah, cool idea. Cool that they're bringing this game back and they're kind of keeping that sort of unique part of it intact. So coming to Japan in November, and then we'll figure out what's happening with the English release probably sometime next year. So this is in a Nanny Nanny Told You So file. Gwent, the Witcher card game is up for pre-order.
No, Jared, this story, this is bone. I don't use this term lightly, particularly on this podcast, but fake news, Jared. Fake news. We were told this game would never come to mobile. It is a PC experience for PC gamers.
How long ago was it? This was like 3 or 4 years ago, right? That Gwent even came out, and it was basically a standalone game spawn from a little mini game that you could play inside Witcher.
Also, I'm pretty sure that we saw it first when it first was being demoed at like E3 or something like that. Yeah. And we wrote it up as if it was a mobile game, right?
Like, and it was like, oh, no. This is Steam. And and
this is a PC game for PC gamers. Get out of here, casuals.
Yeah. And it was like, are you out of your mind? Like, Hearthstone was blowing up at the time and stuff like that. And it's like, why would you not be on mobile? So here we go. It's coming to mobile. Big surprise. I guess it did take several years, but I don't know. Maybe it's too little too late. Maybe it's right at the perfect timing because Hearthstone seems to be winding down. I don't know. And pretty interesting. So October 29th is when Gwent, the Witcher card game, will launch on mobile.
When does Witcher come out on Switch? Is it around the same time?
It might be. That would make sense as kind of a promotional thing.
I wonder if that's kind of what they're trying to do is like maybe the game kind of like ran its course on PC, like both of them. And they're like, all right, well, we'll dump this on mobile and put The Witcher on Switch.
Right. Yeah.
That seems reasonable.
I don't know. I'm really curious to try Witcher on Switch, though, and see how it is. But
me too.
So this was kind of a interesting, different sort of thing for Touch Arcade. Sean actually got his hands on a Sega Genesis Mini, which if you haven't been following along.
Anyway,
what's that?
Did Sega just give it to him? A review unit?
Yeah, they did send him a review unit. So
that's cool.
If you haven't been following along, like everyone and their brother is releasing a mini console of classic gaming systems.
I have my mini PlayStation right here, baby.
Yeah, there's your little PlayStation. There's a little SNES, a little NES.
Wait a minute, SNES?
SNES. What did I say?
Is that how you pronounce it? Is SNES?
I say SNES. I don't know where that came from.
But I was going to say, I've never heard that before.
SNES. There's a mini TurboGrafx on its way. And,
I have that pre-ordered. Well,
mini Commodore or something like that.
I don't care about that one.
Mini Neo Geo. So, yeah, mini everything that you could think of. The Genesis Mini is actually one of the better ones. And so they sent Sean one, and he was like, well, I want to review this, but does it fit with Touch Arcade or whatever? So he's actually had the clever idea of kind of comparing what it's like playing the Genesis Mini on your TV to playing the Sega Forever Genesis releases on mobile, and kind of comparing and contrasting the different features of them, and talking about, you know, what it's like to play touchscreen, you know, games designed for physical controls on a touchscreen compared to playing with an actual replica Genesis controller, that bad three-button bad boy right there. So yeah, kind of cool. Worth checking out if you're interested in these mini retro consoles. and we're checking out if you just enjoy the Genesis in general.
Yeah, these are available for pre-order on Amazon right now, actually, and they're still shipping on release day.
Next Friday.
Yeah, because like when I saw this, I was like, "Oh shit!" I totally forgot that was coming out, and like,
yeah.
I don't know. I've been like, I have like PTSD over getting like the NES Classic. How absurdly difficult that was.
Right.
So I was like all like panicked. I was like, "Oh no!" Yeah. Like I really wanted one of these. Like, and I'm sure they're all sold out. Then like, sure enough, yeah. No fuss on Amazon.
Well, the funny thing is I don't know if that's just because Sega was smart and like made a lot of them or whatever, but like it seems like every step of the way since this thing was announced, Sega has done what everyone wishes all the other companies have done in terms of like the game library that comes with it. And in terms of like the features of the console itself, and pretty much the only real misstep that people are mad about is that it comes with the original 3-button controller
instead of 6-button. Well, the good news is though, it works with the USB 6 button. So if you buy,
you can buy
and they think they're like $30 or $40 or something like that. Yeah. So, but honestly, like from looking at the game lineup, it doesn't, nothing really stands out to me as like,
there's
you need
fighting
the 6
games
button
that would benefit from it, but everything else is pretty fine with 3 buttons anyway. So nostalgia factor I think is better with the 3-button because that crazy boomerang looking thing.
This is cool though. I'm super stoked for this.
I'm
really into all these mini consoles. I think I have them all.
I know they're fun to collect and they're so cute, but I don't even have enough HDMI ports on my TV.
I was trying to think of like a cool way to kind of like put them all out but and buy like an HDMI switch from like Monoprice or something so they can all like be connected, but I was like, another project I'll never actually finish. So fuck
maybe
it.
Someday.
So that's cool.
So anyway, check that out. Genesis Mini hardware review. Spoiler alert, it's pretty good. So last year, I think, Konami announced Castlevania Grimoire of Souls, which is a smartphone Castlevania game. That went over real, real well with the real gamer crowd. They were super happy that a new Castlevania game was coming to smartphones exclusively. Anyway, fast forward a year later, and it actually went through short beta in Japan, so we did see some footage of it, I think, earlier this year. Mm-hmm. But with Tokyo Game Show going on, they've released a new trailer. And it kind of sounds like, I think they had mentioned they were going to release this in 2019. So it sounds like it's probably getting pretty close to coming out. Basically, it's kind of cool, actually. It's sort of a, it's sort of like a best of Castlevania game where you get to play as all the, or many of the different vampire hunters from the different games over the years. And then tons of the different enemies and bosses from the different games are all in there. It's kind of like a big remix game.
That's cool.
You go through and kind of clear out the levels and fight the boss and whatever. And you can actually play co-op online with other people. And it's really similar to the Xbox and PS3 game, Castlevania Harmony of Despair, which was like a XBLA game or something like that. It was like a digital-only release many years ago.
I don't know if I played that one.
But yeah, it was cool. You'd group up with friends, and then you'd all clear out a big castle on your own. And it was just kind of cool. So they're looking to do something similar to that with the mobile release. Really curious to see how that turns out. I know for a fact Sean actually played this on the show floor, so hopefully he'll have some kind of like an impressions thing about it or whatever. But new trailer looks super cool. I love Castlevania to death, and so I'm very excited to play this, actually. I'm one of the ones that's not mad about it.
Yeah, that's Grimoire, that's cool.
Grimoire of Souls. Hopefully it will be launching before the end of the year.
I mean, Dead Cells has proven that you can have like a game like that that works on mobile with touchscreen stuff. So.
Big time. Big time. So, yeah.
Whatever.
And then the final kind of news story before we hit all the big Apple stuff is that a new Five Nights at Freddy's game is being released. Five Nights at Freddy's AR : Special Delivery. This is actually really cool. Like, I'm not a big Five Nights at Freddy's guy, but as we talked about a few weeks ago when they released kind of the remastered versions or whatever, it's still insanely popular with people. And so this is actually a brand new game, and it never occurred to me until I watched this trailer, but an AR version of Five Nights at Freddy's is just super brilliant.
Yeah.
So the trailer is basically like you walking around your own house, and, you know, there's Freddy robots coming after you and stuff like that, and it's actually very creepy. It kind of makes a lot of sense because the Five Nights at Freddy games are all kind of first person or whatever. And it's neat to be able to sort of, this seems like a game that takes advantage of AR in a really good way.
You know? For sure.
Like it's poised really well for it. So
yeah, this is cool. And I'm, it's also worth mentioning too, and I think we've mentioned this in the previous couple episodes, but there's HD versions of Five Nights at Freddy's that are either out now or coming out soon, one or the other. Mm-hmm. That are totally worth checking out. If you haven't played these games yet, I would get the HD versions because like the art looks so much better. I haven't fiddled with the mobile version, but the PC version is like a million times better than the original.
The first game has been the HD remasters released on mobile. And then they released Five Nights at Freddy's 6, actually, the Freddy Fazbear's Pizza Simulator game. So they kind of jumped ahead, but that one hadn't been on mobile before, so it's actually new to mobile. And then Five Nights at Freddy's 2 should be getting the HD remaster probably before the end of this month is what they told me. And so hopefully those updates will kind of the pace will increase a little bit after that. But you can definitely start out with the first one now if you haven't played it before, and it'll be all HDified for you. So
hell yeah.
Pretty cool. But this AR version, no release date yet or anything like that, but they specifically waited to announce it for Friday the 13th. So there's your spookiness for the week.
I'm spooked out.
So Apple held their big event on Tuesday morning and announced the new iPhones, which we'll talk about in a minute. But more important to us is that they announced finally the pricing and release date of Apple Arcade. It's going to launch next Thursday on the 19th, and it's going to be $4.99 a month with a 1 month free trial. Pretty much all that was known already because the price and trial leaked, and then the 19th just kind of everyone guessed because by now we sort of know Apple's September plans. So yeah, it was a pretty safe bet that that's what it was going to be. But it's kind of cool. They demoed three games on stage. I think they probably made a mistake leading with Frogger.
Yeah, they got roasted hardcore with that. It seemed like
I know. I feel bad. It's by the guys that made BitTrip though. So it's like a good like pedigree of developer that's making this new Frogger game. And like you know, everyone's joking because they said everybody loves Frogger, but like everybody does love Frogger. So it's just kind of like.
That was kind of like, in my opinion, that was like the Apple keynote moment that was like the same as like the Blizzard Diablo one where the guy was like, what, don't you guys have phones or whatever? Yeah. And it's like, okay, that's true, but that's like a very dumb thing to say to an audience people that aren't digging what you're putting out.
I have a feeling that Frogger game is going to be super fun, actually. That's cool, but like it was just not a good front foot forward, I thought, for the presentation. And they led off the entire presentation with Apple Arcade. So this is like, everyone's tuned in, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, here's our awesome gaming service. Here's Frogger. And there was just zero excitement whatsoever. And then the thing that kills me is that they followed it up with two really good-looking games. So that's kind of like...
I was like when I was watching it and they led off with Apple Arcade. I was like, oh damn, like I bet this is gonna be like a 30-minute long like E3 press conference thing of like rapid fire, like check out all these awesome games. Yeah. And then they like lead in with Frogger and I'm just like, oh boy, what's going on?
Yeah, so maybe not the best start. And then they demoed a game from Capcom called Shinsekai Into the Depths. And I had never heard of this before, and this looked badass. Yeah. I think the best way I could describe it was it looked like Waking Mars underwater. Mm-hmm. Really good graphics, and it seems like kind of maybe a Metroidvania sort of game where you're sort of like this scuba dude swimming around. And it just looked awesome. The whole style of it seemed really cool. And that instantly, like if they had led with that, I'd be instantly like, oh, I'm going to at least do the free trial to check this out. This looks rad.
It just doesn't make sense. Like when you have like, so I'm pretty sure we have it in our list, but like they've released a couple other videos since then of like the other games on Apple Arcade. And like every single one of those looks cooler than Frogger.
My guess is they were just trying really hard to like have kind of a different like breadth of style game, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess.
So they're like, look, this is super kid-friendly Frogger, colorful, fun, blah, blah, blah. And then this more sort of like hardcore gamery game. And then the third title they showed was Samogo's new game, which is just like an acid trip game. Yeah. But like...
it reminded me of...
That's my only guess because I feel like there's so many other things that could have showed off that show better than Frogger.
Yeah. But I just like, it reminds me of, you remember when they released the Apple TV that could run apps?
Yeah.
And they were like, they made this like big deal about, oh, it runs apps for the first time, which means it's got games on it. So let's check out some of the games. It's like, all right, here's Crossy Road.
Yeah, totally.
And everyone was
like, oh my God, it's Crossy Road. Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of another, yeah. So I don't know, maybe, you know, I feel like they're making strides with gaming, but I still feel like Apple for, you know, for the most part, doesn't totally get gaming or whatever.
Yeah.
But like you said, they did release a couple of other trailers since then. And then apparently after the event was over was sort of the embargo time being up for developers to be able to announce games and show off new trailers and things like that for Apple Arcade. So we actually got during the event, they showed when they originally announced Apple Arcade in March, there was like, I think a slide where they showed 30 developers that had signed on. And they showed a new updated version of that slide, which had almost 100 developers signed on.
Yeah.
And there's just going to be 100 games on the service. So that's almost like everyone. And I know a lot of those developers have multiple games, too. So, yeah, it's really interesting to see where this is all going to go. But I'm really excited about this launching next week and seeing what's on there. And I think we debated before, I'm not super stoked on their strategy of just farting everything out in one big lump of 100 games. But I don't know. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. Like, what I'm curious about with Apple Arcade is Apple as a company has kind of like an interesting history with games, and that like from, you know, us working with Touch Arcade and like just knowing people at Apple working on game stuff, like there are people there that are like ultra passionate about gaming that are super OG gamer types, and like
it's about
trying to
convince the higher ups about
stuff. And it seems like even though you have someone like Mark Bozon who announced who commentated that one of the videos, and that dude is like ultra mega OG, it just seems like he has to like sell stuff to his boss who sells stuff to his boss who sells stuff to his boss, and it and this is just an outside perspective and things I've heard from other people, but it seems like any person in that chain could be like, fuck that.
Yeah.
We're not going to do it. And that's where it stops.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So it makes me wonder if, like, the Frogger thing wasn't, like, behind the scenes. And this is pure speculation on my part, so don't take it as me knowing anything. But, it wouldn't surprise me if, like, Mark or whoever else, like, went to them and were like, all right, here's what we should show off. Here's the fucking, like, real crazy system sellers.
Yeah.
And maybe like Tim or whatever was like, I don't know any of these. Like what are these? And Mark's like, well, we have Frogger too. And they were like, yes, that's the one. All right. Yeah. I know Frogger. Let's do it.
I recognize that name. Book it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like it's
Frogger.
It's interesting to think about like what led to that. So I don't know.
There's definitely gotta be some of that at play, but I do think, I think they're making strides. I think they're getting more leeway to do gaming stuff, letting the people that actually know their stuff and care a lot, to be able to do, you know, stuff for gaming that's actually serious and means something. So I don't know, really curious to see how, Apple Arcade turns out when it launches next week, really excited for it. And, we have a pretty complete, there's been some more games announced since then, but a pretty complete list of everything that's been announced so far. And then like
the other
you
thing,
said, there's,
did you notice that they were kind of like wishy-washy about like what was going to be actual like launch titles?
Yeah.
And that, it was like really, and I saw this across, because like as soon as Apple Arcade got announced, I was like, all over like Reddit and different game forums, and was like, all right, like let's see what people think about this shit, because like I'm sure it's getting roasted somewhere. And a lot of people picked up on the fact that like they said a couple times like there's 100 games coming, but in like the PR and stuff like that only featured like a few, and then mentioned that there's like more games coming every month. So like are they dumping out 100 games at launch? Like,
Really been the indication, but it would not surprise me if that's not the case, because there's only been like 50 to 60 announced so far of the 100. And yeah, in the official PR and everything like that, they've only really highlighted a few at a time. So I don't know. I don't know if they're just holding back and 100 of these things are going to launch on Thursday or what. Like we've talked about before, though, you know, it's a subscription service. They want you to subscribe and keep subscribing monthly. So it would make sense to be like, here's 30 games. They're all really good. They cover a wide variety of genres. And then there's going to be new ones every week or two, or even a few a month or whatever. and to keep you subscribing, because as it is right now, right. It's like, if you were like, if I was like 12 and I had like an iPod Touch or something like that, I'm signing up for that free trial and I'm playing nonstop and beating as many of those 100 games as I can before the trial runs out. And then by that month, you know, by the month ending, you're probably like, yeah, well, I got my fix. You know, I got my squeeze as much juice out of that free month as I could. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm not worried about subscribing anymore or whatever. And yeah, maybe down the line, one or two things that you really want come out. But is that going to be enough to be like, subscribe again or whatever?
Maybe. I don't like that. That's what's so crazy about this whole thing is that like the value proposition of mobile games and mobile game pricing makes this all so insane.
I still don't imagine how anyone's going to be making money aside from Apple just paying them to make sure they make money.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because, like, yeah. I've seen a lot of people be like, I don't know, $5, that seems like a lot.
Yeah.
When it's like, dude, if this was, like, a Steam thing and it was like, here's 100 great games that, like, Valve went out and had people make for the PC, it's $5 a month. Like, people would be tripping over
people
themselves.
People would lose their shit.
To sign up for it, you know?
I can't get over the fact that people are really mad about this pricing thing or even wary about subscribing to it because if you even have like a passing interest in mobile gaming and you're not a big free-to-play game fan, I guarantee you're spending at least $5 a month on different games that come out. Like there's that many at least monthly premium games coming out and they usually are at least $5. So
yeah.
It just seems like the value proposition is so off the charts that I can't imagine anyone getting mad at that unless you just absolutely don't play mobile games. And if that's the case, then, you know, that's fair. But then why do you even care?
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, too, like what really blew me away with this was that I was expecting the climax of all these kind of like services announcements being like, and by the way, here's our new iCloud pricing for $100 a year. You get Apple Arcade, Apple TV Plus and a terabyte of storage on iCloud. That's all you can eat kind of one thing.
I feel like that has to be coming. And I feel like they did a really smart thing by announcing that everyone gets a year of Apple TV Plus service by buying a new iPhone because you're automatically they're going to sell millions of new iPhones. You know what I mean? And new iPads and whatever. And so if you're automatically getting a year of that stuff, people are going to check it out. You know what I mean? And they might fall in love with some of Apple's original programming and stuff like that. And when that year's up, they might be like, yes, I'm on board for $5 a month. Because that's $5 a month too, which is just bananas cheap. So
yeah.
And it was... I see why they maybe didn't include like a free year of Apple Arcade also. Because to be totally honest, I could see the service just being gone in a year.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, we'll see. I don't know. It seems like a major lost opportunity to not have that. I mean, cause like imagine when you like check out with your iPhone, you know, and it's like, okay, do you want Apple Care Plus? Yes. No. Okay. Do you want, the iCloud Supreme Ultimate package or whatever? Yes. No. $100. I mean, cause like when back in the day, I don't know if you ever did this, but like, when I bought a new Mac and they gave you the thing to like buy the .Mac service, it was normally like $100, but if you bought it with your computer, it was like 80.
Yeah.
And I was always like, all right, yeah, I'm spending like $2,000. Like, yeah, why wouldn't I spend $80 on this like other dumb thing that I might use? I don't know. It seems strange to not offer that, but we'll see.
Maybe down the line, they'll have some sort of bundling thing or something like that. Maybe they just really wanted to like inject the free Apple TV service into everyone's veins when they buy new iPhones and kind of warm them up to the idea of subscription services for different kinds of media.
Yeah.
And then the $5 a month thing, I think there was a lot of negativity around it, which I think is weird. Like a lot of people were really surprised and pleased with the pricing. $5 a month for Apple Arcade is a crazy good deal. But like a lot of people were also like, oh man, it's so cheap and such a good deal. And yeah, I'm not going to get it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so, but I also think we suffer sometimes from like being in the echo chamber of like the people that cover tech and kind of forgetting about the broader, much broader audience of just your regular average people.
Yeah.
And I think a big segment of the audience that's going to love this sort of thing is the parents who are constantly getting badgered to buy like coin packs for, you know, the free to play games for their kids or something like that. Mm-hmm. When if you know you can spend $5 and then not only yourself, but everyone in your family up to five people can share all those games and you never have to spend anything extra. That's a big deal, I think. And especially if some of these games become really popular with like kids on the schoolyard and stuff like that, because that's how free-to-play games always go. What your friends are playing at school is what everyone gets into, and that's what gets popular. So if some of these Apple Arcade games can do stuff like that, you know, I feel like it's an easier thing for little whoever to be like, Dad, can I spend $5 a month for thing instead of spending $20 a month on coin packs or whatever it was. So
yeah,
I don't know. I think it's gonna do okay, but.
Yeah, I mean, it is a very valid point that it's easy to lose sight of, like, reality versus, like, the internet peanut gallery of, like, tech pundits and internet commenters, you know? Because, like, I've had to kind of, like level set myself on, like, game club stuff, too. And, you go, like, people are, like, ultra negative about what we're doing. And I talk to, like, people that aren't angry internet people that are like, oh, dude, yeah, that sounds awesome. Like, I'm totally in. This is great. Like, I can't believe it didn't exist before, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm sure Apple Arcade will be the exact same way.
Well, the other thing too is, like, I know you've struggled with this over the years, but people find out what you do and they're like, oh, what's the best game to play? Mm-hmm. And you're always like, I don't fucking know, man. There's like 30,000 awesome games.
Yeah, it's like 100 games came out this week. I don't know
what type of games you like or whatever. It's like this whole can of worms. And I've even specifically tried to make specific folders of games to recommend to people for when I get that question. So I could be like, oh, well, Oceanhorn's really good or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it still never works out. It's just such a loaded question, and people don't realize that. But now if somebody's like, oh, those are cool games for your iPhone, I'd be like, oh, Apple Arcade, do the 1 month free trial and just go bananas downloading anything you want. Mm-hmm. You're bound to like something. And if you keep liking it, $5 a month, it's super cheap.
Yeah.
You know, I that's a really effortless recommendation for people to try too. So I don't know. I'm really curious to see how this is going to do in the long run, but I'm excited for it now. I'm excited for the games. There's a lot of really good looking games. Apple actually created their own little 2-minute supercut of a bunch of the upcoming games where they actually talk about a few that I hadn't heard of before. And then they talk about some that we have known about, but go a little more in depth to them or whatever. It's just a quick 2-minute little thing. Definitely worth your time if you haven't seen it yet.
So the interesting thing about this that people pointed out that I didn't, kind of do the internet investigative work to find out, but a lot of these developers are not being bashful at all about the fact that these games are like coming to Steam in like 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
A lot of people were kind of confused when Apple announced that these were exclusive games when they first announced Apple Arcade. All that really means is that exclusive on mobile, which means no Android for now. And like Sayonara Wild Hearts, the new Simogo game, is launching next Thursday on Apple Arcade and Switch and PS4 all on the same day.
Oh, really? All on the same day? Wow.
So it's not even a case of like, oh, it's mobile exclusive for a month and then it can be on consoles. It's as long as you're not also on Android, I think Apple doesn't care if you're on other platforms, which I think is kind of cool. But pretty interesting to see that a lot of these games were either already in development for other platforms anyway, and Apple Arcade kind of enticed them to also make mobile versions, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, like I saw a lot of people that were super pissed off about Cat Quest, because they're taking, like, some people that were looking forward to, like, Cat Quest on, like, Xbox or PC or whatever, like, take this as, like, oh, the game's been delayed so it can be on Apple Arcade.
Yeah.
Which I can see that. I mean, that's... I don't know. Kind of a weird take, but sure, I guess.
Yeah.
The
game that started out as a mobile game, but
yeah.
This is a good little video though to watch to get a kind of overview of some of the different games that are coming out, and then we've been trying to kind of collect different trailers, at least new ones, that have been released for some of the Apple Arcade games, and so. We have a story here that has one for Tuwaga Among Shadows, which you might remember the original Tuwaga, which is like a really stylish sort of fixed position shooter game. The sequel has been in the works for like 2 years or whatever. So it's kind of interesting. It actually started out as an update to the original game and it blew up so big. They were like, well, we're just going to make a sequel. And then that sequel has now taken like 2 years. So happy to see this finally releasing, and I think this will be a good one. Sayonara Wild Hearts, we've talked about a lot. We saw it at PAX. I think I'm more hot on it than you are, but I am real hot on it.
I'm hot on it. I'm very worried about what the reaction to this game is going to be on non-mobile platforms.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. It'll be really... I it's... It, yeah. I agree. I feel like it's going to play best on touchscreen, and it's ultimately designed around a touchscreen. But I think it's like the artsiness of it all will win a lot of people over anyway, so we'll see.
Yeah.
And then this was a game that got announced at the event that I didn't know existed at all, so it was a really pleasant surprise. Exit the Gungeon.
Oh, you don't have this on Switch?
No, I have Enter the Gungeon. This is the sequel.
I didn't realize that. I thought it was the same game. I was like, oh, I have it on Switch. Cool.
Yeah, so Enter the Gungeon is a really good bullet hell dungeon crawler is how I would explain it. Which is just really popular. I think it came out in like 2016 or 2017. So it's been out on other platforms for a few years or whatever. This is actually a direct sequel. And Enter the Gungeon, you're actually trying to descend floor by floor like you would in like most dungeon crawlers. This sort of picks up where you're at the bottom and the whole thing's trying to collapse. And so you're trying to frantically escape floor by floor up into the surface.
Sure enough, it is Enter the Gungeon. You're right.
Interesting. Yeah. So this is actually like a sequel to Enter the Gungeon built specifically for mobile. It's not like an isometric top-down dungeon crawler thing. It's more of a side view, almost like a platformer, but still very bullet hell-y.
Yeah, that's cool. I was wondering how this is going to work because like it's almost like challenging to play on the Switch, like, or
it's a very hectic game.
Enter the Gungeon, that is like it's like almost too much with two joysticks and buttons and stuff, so I was like, man, how is that even gonna work? But that makes sense that it's a different game. I mean, I'm just an idiot.
A sequel. So I'm really excited about that. And then just yesterday we posted a bunch more trailers. One is Super Impossible Road, which if you're into mobile gaming, you should remember Impossible Road. It was a pretty big hit many years ago, and then this was the sort of console version that I want to say was PlayStation exclusive for a while, or maybe PlayStation and Steam or something like that. It's sort of like super deluxe take on the Impossible Road formula. And I remember talking to the developer of this at PAX, not this last one, but maybe the year before. He was at the Indie Mega booth.
One's actually published by Rogue too, which is cool that they're
Matt Casamassia, I always say his name wrong. But anyway, I remember asking him if it was going to come to mobile or not, and he was sort of like, I don't know. You know, like, it probably could, and I might do it or whatever, but it just doesn't. You know, he was sort of one of those developers that had early success in the early days of the App Store and then got sort of, like, jaded with how everything had become and just wasn't, like, a good moneymaker anymore.
I feel like we went out to dinner with him, not last GDC, but maybe the GDC before, and that was, like, 2 days after, like, Catch Up, just, like, completely cloned his game, right?
Yeah, they did totally clone his game, which is always another reason to just not want to be dealing with mobile anymore or whatever.
But it's good because I don't remember.
This is like obviously a game that works on mobile really well because the original was popular. So happy to see the sequel coming to Apple Arcade. Enchanted World is a game we actually saw at GDC last year. Noodlecake is publishing it, and it's sort of like a I don't know how to explain it. It's kind of like a puzzle-y platformer sort of thing. We're checking out the trailer. It looks really cool. I thought it looked cool when we saw it at GDC. So this is another one of those games where it's like, oh, yeah, I remember that, and I'm happy that it's releasing.
Yeah, for sure.
I feel like a lot of those snuck into Apple Arcade.
Hell yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, that's just a small snippet of stuff to look forward to. That was like 6 games out of like 100 they have coming, so that's pretty cool. So we talk about the new iPhone now?
Yeah, let's talk about the new iPhone.
Which one did you order? Did you get one today?
I did. I got the regular Pro.
I went with the Max Deluxe.
Super size?
Ultimate Edition.
Curious to see how you end up enjoying that. I don't know. It's tough.
I dug my old iPhone, which one is this? 7 Six? Plus? 6 Plus? Yeah. I don't know. Out and was like, I like used it for a day and I was like, this doesn't feel big anymore.
Yeah, they're not that bad. I mean, it was really weird when they first came out because you were jumping from an iPhone 5, which feels like a baby phone nowadays. And then you hold that 6
I might
Plus.
Have... Like, here, keep talking. I'm going to grab my iPhone 5.
Okay. But yeah, I always resisted going the big phone route because it always just seemed like a hassle to get in your pocket and stuff like that. And I finally caved in with the 7... Yeah, the 7S Plus or whatever it was called. Because I want to say because of the dual cameras. And I don't think the original 7 had... I think it just had a single camera. So that was like my whole reason for getting the Plus version, was I wanted that second camera experience. And I ended up loving the large size. The huge screen is awesome. It feels really good in your hands playing games. And just in general, usability-wise, it was great, but it was slightly a pain in the ass having to deal with the size in your pocket and stuff like that, and I was always having to pull it out before you sit down and things like that. So slightly annoying, not as bad as you might think, and you definitely get used to it.
All right, so I'm going to go through memory lane here on my phones. Yeah. So starting with the iPhone 1,
yeah,
very, very tiny, and then we moved up to the iPhone 3G, I think. This is it, maybe?
I still love that form factor. I love the curved back.
And that was the same, yeah, curved back. And I think this is the iPhone 3G. The 3GS was the one with the shiny back. Yeah, right. Yeah, 32 gig versus 16 gig. Then we went to iPhone 4.
Yeah, that was the radical change. That was my first iPhone.
Yeah, and I think I have I think this is the 4S, or maybe this is the 4. I don't know. And then this is the 5, right? The black backed.
Yeah, that's one of the 5s. That might be 5S.
Maybe this is the iPhone 5. I don't remember. Yeah. That's how fucking stupid this is. I just have a stack of iPhones and you're like, which one is this? I don't remember. But anyway,
it's
so kind
of fun though too.
But like the difference in size, like, so this is what I went between.
Right.
Like, it is insane how different the size between the iPhone 5 and the 6 S was, or right. 6 Plus or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas now, like, going between like the iPhone 10 and the Plus is like no big deal.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, totally, slightly larger.
So that's fine. We'll give it a go. I don't know.
It's a baby steps thing. So
yeah, that's the thing. Like 5 to the fucking 6 Plus was like Jesus. Yeah. What did I do?
But yeah, I after getting the 10, which was sort of like larger but not as small as the original iPhones and not as big as the Plus sizes, I thought was like the Goldilocks size. And so that's why I didn't really have a big desire to go back, although I loved having the big screen of the Plus size models. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But the other thing I was thinking was the regular iPhone 11 is like a size in between those two.
Yeah.
And that would be kind of a money thing too, is to get that. But I just wanted that stupid third camera. I don't know why. And I want the OLED screen because I'm used to it with iPhone 10. I feel like it would be a step backwards to go back to LCD.
Yeah, I mean, especially like with you and your kid and stuff, like I would want like the absolute like best camera that they've got.
The telephoto lens, I think, would be very handy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway, that's ultimately why I went with the Pro, spent the extra money.
Because like, but I use the zoom camera, 2x camera, telephoto, whatever we're calling it. Like sometimes to do like close-ups, you know, like not even,
I do that a lot.
You know, because it seems like it focuses better than the other camera does close.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
No, I agree. I really jazzed on that was really the focus of this event and the new iPhones in general, is that the cameras are badass. And they didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about many other new features because, frankly, there's not a ton of new features. Form factor-wise, it's almost identical to the last 2 years. And then, or 3 years, maybe 4 years. I feel like this is the overall design hasn't changed much in a while, which I'm actually fine with because they're super comfortable to hold. And I think the sizes are good and, you know, whatever, you don't have to fix what's not broken. So, that's fine and everything. And they really just put all the emphasis on the improved cameras, both for the regular iPhone 11 and the two Pro models. I think one of the bummers about the Pro models is that there's only one new color, which is a very cool, like deep green.
That's what I midnight. Got.
I got the green one.
Yeah.
I almost went for that one just to be different because I wanted a colorful phone, and I chickened out and got the black one instead. I was also kind of waffling between the silver. But it kind of bums me out that the regular iPhone 11 comes in so many cool colors. Same with the 10R last year, came in a bunch of cool colors. I think I'd get a weird color one if the Pros came in them. But
do you want to hear the sound of shuffling a stack of iPhones?
Whoa. Play some three card Monty with iPhones. So I got the regular size Pro, and I'm gonna go pick it up in the store next Friday, so that should be interesting too. And I'm dumb, and even though I bought an Apple Watch Series 4 a year ago, less than a year ago, I bought the 5.
I did the same thing. Same exact thing. It's well, really... like my I've ranted about this for a long time on this very podcast, is that like I have maintained for a long time that the Pebble has always been a better smartwatch than the Apple Watch.
Because you can look at it and know
because,
what time it is.
Yeah, because you can just sit there and like look over at your watch and go, oh, okay, that's what time it is. Versus, like, I've always hated the whole like, let me raise my wrist and do the international sign for I got better shit to do.
Right.
To see what time it is, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. So the Series 5 Apple Watch, always on display, same battery life. Why couldn't they have done this last year? Mm-hmm. The dumb thing for me is that I had an Apple Watch Series 0, the very OG one, until I upgraded to the Series 4 last year, because I finally felt like, you know what, it's like full screen, it's going to be way faster. It's, you know, I feel like there was a lot of good reasons to upgrade, and it's going to feel like a really big upgrade from a original Apple Watch. Now, it's like I probably would have suffered with that for another year and then felt like, this is finally the number one feature I wanted on the Apple Watch.
I know, for real. Like any other dumb little feature, I'd probably been like, I don't know, this one's totally fine.
Exactly.
Like, I
can wait a few more years if I want to upgrade this, but no, I want that always on display. So I ponied up the dough. I did check eBay, and Apple Watch Series 4 sell for a few a few hundred bucks. So I think I can get a good chunk of that back.
So the Apple trade-in thing, I have the stainless one with GPS, and it's like, oh, we'll give you $110. And I was like, fuck off with that. Are you kidding me?
So I'm actually, the trade-in for phones, and it seems like some of the Macs too, isn't bad. Mm-hmm. I'm going to trade in my iPhone 10 and get $400 for it. I feel like that's, I think it was $1,000 when I bought it 2 years ago. So that's not like amazing, but it's probably... I don't think you'd get much more for it selling it as a private party or whatever.
No, and then you have to deal with the hassle of dealing with some Craigslist jackass.
Right. Like, so I feel like $400, I'm cool with that. But, you know, anything below that, like you have a Apple Watch that's not even a year old, and it's one of the pricier ones, mm-hmm. max $110. That's the same I'm getting for my aluminum one, which was like a few hundred dollars cheaper than your stainless steel.
Insane.
Yeah, it's completely stupid. So... that I will sell.
What's bonkers too is that like the reason I got, because originally I was like, I don't need to upgrade to the new fucking Apple Watch. Like the Series 3 is fine. Like the bigger screen doesn't really do too much for me, whatever.
Right.
And then like I looked to see, because that was, I think, the first year they did their own trade-ins on the Apple Watch.
Yeah.
And I like looked to see what I would get for mine. And it was like, holy shit. Like if I don't upgrade, like I'm being an idiot, because I don't remember how much money they gave me, but it was like, it felt like too much.
Yeah.
That's why I got mine. And to, like, to have it turn around this year and be like, oh, yeah, we're basically going to steal this watch from you. We're going to give you so little money. Like, insane.
Yeah, it's really sad. So, yeah, whatever. It is what it is, I guess. Dumped a lot of money on my credit card this morning. I don't know how I feel about it, but I'll have some shiny new toys next week.
I mean, the way I rationalize it is that, like, if you consider like the cost per use on things like the iPhone and the Apple Watch, like you don't own a thing that beats it as far as that, you know, like, so I don't
know. Neither of us got new iPhones last year either. So, being on that 2 year upgrade cycle at least feels like it's going to be an actual upgrade instead of like just a slight bump when you go year to year. Cause a lot of times we'd buy new iPhones and it'd be like, yeah, it's awesome. But really feel like I needed this or whatever.
Well, particularly the 10 and the 10s. Like I had a lot of friends. Like the reason I didn't get one was because I like, I don't know, I like overslept or whatever. I missed the pre-order window, and like when I looked, it was like, oh fuck, it's like a month out now. And
right.
I probably just get one from the Apple Store faster. And and then like friends of mine were getting them on launch day, and they're like, dude, don't even waste your time. Like it feels the same as the other one. Like the camera's not really any better.
Right.
The old iPhone 10 wasn't slow.
Yeah.
So.
And it's still not slow. Like, to be totally truthful, I could live with this iPhone 10 for another year or two or more. Who knows? Yeah. And I kind of feel like if the rumors are true that there's going to be more of a, like, a more design overhaul with next year's iPhone, and a lot of the features that were kind of rumored for this year's that didn't make it in or whatever, it's going to be tempting to want to upgrade again next year. But then I'll feel kind of foolish because why did I buy this one? I could have had the...
I mean, I guess it depends. The trade-in stuff still continues to be good, and it basically costs you like $500 a year to have the new phone.
Which over the course of a year, something you use multiple times every day.
Yeah, like that bad. What, like 40, 45-ish bucks a month, something like that. Right. Over. Yeah. That's not terrible.
Yeah, so we'll see. But yeah, excited to get the new iPhone. And I think for a lot of people, even upgrading from a 10 is kind of like, you know, questionable. But a lot of people out there have older phones than that. And I think this will be a big leap for them. The people that didn't jump on the 10 or 10S.
Yeah, see, like Lindsay had the 8 Plus. So for her, like she's getting Face ID and like way better cameras and the OLED screen. And
yeah.
So it's like a huge upgrade for her.
My sister, who's obsessed with the color purple, I texted her and was like, you see this purple iPhone? What's up? And she's like, I didn't see that. And so I'm like, yeah. So we started talking about it. She's like, you know, should I get a new one? Is it worth it? What's cool about it? What's not? Like, whatever. So I kind of gave her the whole rundown of all the new iPhones. And she's coming from a 7.
Oh, wow.
A regular 7 that had just a single camera and stuff like that. So I'm like, I think it's worth it for you. It's going to be faster. It's going to be full screen. She was debating getting a big phone, like a plus size one. And I'm like, well, they don't have the plus size ones in purple. So, but this one's larger than your phone now, and it'll have a full screen, which honestly feels almost as big as a plus size phone screen.
Right.
Which was always something that was kind of cool about the 10 was this screen size wise, you were very close to the larger size iPhone anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then plus with the dual cameras, especially that new ultra wide one, I was like, I think you'll get a lot of benefit out of it. And it's purple. So
for sure.
I think I got her sold on one, but
yeah, no, I'm super stoked for these. It's going to be pretty neat to have a, you know, the new thing. I love the dark mode on the pictures. That's insane.
I like, can't wait to, that's another thing that's I've been dying for over the years. It's something that takes good night photos.
Yeah, because like that was always kind of like the downside of, I mean, don't get me wrong, I really like that camera phones are getting so good that you almost like don't need a point and shoot camera, but like that has always been something that has been sorely lacking in these smaller cameras is like nighttime photography. I mean, like the digital camera I had like in the days of like the Palm Trio like blows the iPhone out of the water as far as like low light photos is concerned, just because it lets so much more light in. Like it's just a physical limitation.
Right.
So it's really, I'm really cool. Very curious to see what the night mode stuff like actually looks like in use.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the other thing with these keynotes always is that like, I don't mean to sound like I think Apple's misleading anyone, but yeah, I mean, cause like, you know, they show like, oh, these are photos and video shot on an iPhone 11 Pro and stuff. And like, okay, yeah, sure. Like you guys are shooting it on this hardware. I completely believe that, but you are like cherry picking the best photographers and videographers in the world with professional lighting and everything else. So like
you have a camera gimbal and
like you're demonstrating like what the absolute maximum performance of this camera can be. What I want to see is like, how does it take a picture of my dog?
Yeah.
Jumping around.
Right.
In the dark.
No, the real world applications are so much more important than the very carefully curated demo stuff. So,
I mean, cause like the videos they showed, like that black and white, video they should like whatever movie demo that was, like that looked outstanding for a phone camera. Like it was bananas, but like I'll never shoot anything that looks like that in a million years. You know, and the other thing was cool too, like these for the first time can record a video with the front and back camera going at the same time.
That simultaneous camera stuff, I didn't think I would care about something like that until he showed the demo, and I was like, that's actually really rad, because you can just film one thing and get kind of different perspectives and different sizes, and you could do so much with that.
I was trying to think, like, I don't know, like I didn't have that takeaway. I was like, that's cool, I guess, but I have no idea when I'd ever use that.
I don't know if I could think of any real world use for it or whatever. One of the things that really I thought was cool about the demo was when they interviewed the two musicians, and they had one in front of the camera and one behind the camera, rolling both at the same time. So you're actually capturing that conversation as it happens from both people.
Well, so did you catch, did they say, or was this on the website anywhere, when you do that, is it creating two different movies, or is it one movie with the thing superimposed in the corner?
I think you can do both. I think it'll capture every stream from every lens if you want it to, and save it in your camera roll, and you can just figure out what to do with it later. But I think there's also the option to have it be picture in picture or whatever. That's all through a third party app, the Filmic, I think.
Oh,
it was
really?
Called?
Oh, okay.
Something like that. So that's not even a native iPhone thing or whatever. But it's kind of cool they're letting developers, you know, access all that stuff and come up with these sort of things that, you know, by next year Apple will Sherlock that feature, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But anyway, yeah, let us know if you're going to be getting a new iPhone or not, if you're interested in them or not, if you feel like they are not innovative enough anymore or what.
Yeah, I saw, of course, every year a lot of people complaining like, oh, it's another boring iPhone update. Yeah. But it's like, man, all right, like pitch an idea. Like, what is this phone missing that you wish it had? And yeah, everyone's always like, I don't know. It should just look different.
Yeah, that's the thing is, like, I feel like people always expect change for the sake of change, which, good design doesn't do that, you know, and it's why some of the most iconic designs in the world, like the Porsche or the Corvette or whatever, like
that Eames chair that people are still buying and stuff.
Yeah, they're very iterative. And, and occasionally, they'll blow the doors off with a crazy new design or whatever, and maybe roll with that for a while or whatever. But almost always the original designs of those things, like they got it right the first time. And so they don't need a whole lot of drastic change year over year. The iPhone's in that same position now where, I don't really know what they would do to have a big change. And it's kind of a shame because the tech world, every time they have one of these events, is like, well, it's the same as last year, but with two new features or whatever, which is technically true. But, what do you want them to do? Like you said, like name something this phone doesn't have that you wish it did. So I don't know. It's kind of sad. And then, the funny thing is that it plays out in real world terms is that like each new iPhone always outsells the last one anyway.
Yeah.
And it's not like anybody cares about that sort of thing except, tech jerks like us. So.
I mean, I think that the regular iPhone 11 is going to be the top seller by far.
Totally. Totally.
Cause that is
I was really tempted by that. I just wanted that camera.
Yeah, I don't. Are we missing anything else from the keynote stuff, or anything else to do with? What's interesting, they kind of have like started to not get into like the actual like speed of the device anymore. Have you noticed that? Because like if you think back to like the keynotes with like I don't know like the iPhone 4, iPhone 4S, or 3GS or whatever, it was like a big part of the announcement was like check out how old and shitty your old phone is because this one's
launch an app
eight times as fast and all this stuff and.
Yeah.
It's interesting that like Apple kind of like subtly through their marketing has been like, I don't know. We've kind of like hit a limit. I mean, these are faster, but like, do you care? Probably not,
It's probably not noticeable to naked eye, some of the speed increases or whatever. Yeah. What I do think is really impressive is when they do that sort of like overall benchmark of their CPU and GPU compared to other phones out there and compared to their own last year's model.
Well, and compared to computers, like this has the same chip as the iPad, which was benchmarking above MacBook Pros when it came out last year, which is insane to think that like you have a phone in your pocket now that potentially, I mean like the 13-inch MacBook Pro we have, like my iPad kicks the shit out of that computer and I'm sure the phone is going to benchmark way above it too, which is insane to think that like your laptop is slower than your phone.
Yeah, I know. But
that's pretty, it makes you wonder.
Well, I don't know. I guess that's debatable, but.
I mean,
your average person, I bet, uses their phone more than the laptop.
Oh, yeah. But it makes you wonder, like, how far off we are from these phones just kind of, like, being your laptop kind of thing, where it's like, okay, you want to use your iPhone? Like, get the iPhone laptop dock thing, and it just works like a MacBook Pro, and you just slot your phone into it, and it's got everything.
Be docked. It probably could be wireless soon enough, or whatever. Yeah, you just set your phone on your desk, and you have a monitor, and that's it.
Because like Motorola was doing that probably a good like 8 years ago now with like the Motorola Atrix, I think it was, which is a really cool thing to see, but it was just like way too early. It was like, okay, so you have a shitty slow Android phone that you now have hooked up to a janky keyboard and low resolution display. Good job.
The idea was great, but the execution was bad.
Yeah.
I don't think that's far off. I feel like we could do that something like that today, but then they'd sell less laptops and iPad keyboard folio things and stuff like that, so why bother? But
I mean, it just really feels like we're and this is kind of another, I don't know, I kind of get in the weeds now, but like I've been watching so I go to the gym every day, I watch like just random dumbass sci-fi shit on like Netflix or Hulu or whatever, and it's been kind of interesting how modern sci-fi like almost can't seem to come up with things that we like don't already have. Like, so for instance, like I just watched Another Life on Netflix, which is this kind of like semi-recent future sci-fi premise where like humans have faster than light technology and like stasis sleep kind of shit to get through it. But like the technology is like flat screen TVs and iPads and stuff. And it's just like really wild to think that like, you know, when you watch like classic sci-fi from, you know, like the 70s or earlier, it's like they have a thing that like looks like the iPad, you know, or just like holding like a iPad shaped thing and go like boop, 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 boop on it. Yeah. And it's just wild that they haven't like really come up with anything new.
Yeah.
On that, like the most like forward facing sci-fi thing in that whole series, which just came out, is like the ship has a human like AI that can like render itself like the those Coachella laser Tupac presentations.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
Which also is a thing that exists too. So it's like that's
you
not even
could
that cool.
Do that, yeah. I think we've touched on this before. I felt like this for a while now, but we live in the future. It's just you don't realize it because you're living through it.
Yeah.
But if you were to transport your 1990 self into 2019, you'd be like, what the hell is going on? This is future world. Like even basic stuff, like you can just tap on your pocket computer to have a car come pick you up or bring you food or whatever. Like that's wild. Super futuristic Jetson stuff to me.
Yeah. And it's crazy.
But you take it for granted because it's just slowly happened over the years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, particularly like when you go to like even like sports bars now, you know, like I think about that a lot when I'm at, you know, like places like Buffalo Wild Wings or whatever, they just have like a million TVs.
Yeah.
When like it wasn't that long ago where it was like, yeah, there's a tube TV hanging in the corner over here, another tube TV over here. This one's playing football. That's baseball. That's all you got.
Yeah.
You know, and now like, it's like
even like 20 years ago, we'd go to watch like basketball playoff games and they would always get blacked out on the regular channel. So we had to find somewhere to go see it. And there's this bar that's in like a suburb that's like a good 25 minute drive away, but they had a big screen and a projector and they play those games on the projector. So it'd be like a thing, like let's go watch the game there and watch it on the projector.
Oh.
And you know, that was just such a big deal.
Yeah. I don't know.
Now it's like TVs are just massive everywhere.
Yeah, it was a strange time. So I don't know. iPhone 11 Pro, I guess we'll get it and have some hot takes.
Yeah, we'll talk about it more next week. And we'll talk about Apple Arcade because we'll get to play some of the games on Thursday.
Yeah.
See how that goes. You want to close this thing out with some Game Club shilling?
Hell yeah, let's shill the shit out of Game Club. So
you guys released a new trailer, your first trailer, which is sort of a introduction to what the hell you guys are and what you're doing.
Yeah, kind of like as it's like Game Club has been kind of stealth, but not in that like we've just been doing this early access thing, like making sure the games are good, like that people like them and like what we're doing and all this stuff, and haven't really made like any kind of like more mass market kind of marketing push until now. Right. So we put out this trailer that kind of has a brief look at a lot of the games we're bringing back, lays out the subscription stuff and things like that. And we released it on Monday before the keynote and actually been pleasantly surprised by us kind of like being included in like the Apple Arcade conversation, which is pretty neat because we're a scrappy startup that has like 0.00001% of the resources of Apple.
Right.
Which is pretty cool. So
I like that you guys are a nice counterpoint to Apple Arcade, because at least on paper you can say, you know, we're doing something different. Apple Arcade is like all brand new games, a lot of them are original to the service or whatever, and Game Club's really about bringing back the lost classic already good games that we've been playing for the last 10 years before Apple Arcade was even a thing or whatever. It's kind of like saying like, hey, you know, Apple feels like they're trying to make this statement about gaming and that it's a serious thing on mobile or whatever, but we've known that for a decade. Mm-hmm. And here's the proof, here's the receipts, all of these really good games that for whatever reason haven't been able to survive, we're bringing them back and letting you play them all again, updated, working, and for, you know, a small monthly fee, just like Apple Arcade. And so I feel like they complement each other too. So if you can convince somebody to, you know, subscribe to something like Apple Arcade, I think you can convince them to subscribe to something like Game Club too.
Yeah.
And when you think, like, I don't know what your guys' pricing is going to be or whatever, but let's say you're $5 like Apple Arcade, $10 a month, and you're getting like a couple hundred games plus new ones every week and every month.
Yeah.
Constantly. I mean, you're going to be swimming in good games to play always and never have to worry about spending extra money or worry about free to play games or any of that stuff.
Purchase shenanigans or seeing another ad ever.
Really,
like, I mean, that's really cool that you know, we're kind of at this state in the App Store. But like, what does concern me about Apple Arcade, and I hope that Game Club can kind of like be the answer to this, is that every year when we go to GDC, right, we talk to developers, and like 98% of them will sometimes be like, hey, do you, you know, this game's coming out in a couple of weeks, like, do you know anyone at Apple? Like, I don't know how to like get this featured or whatever, which has created this kind of like system of like haves and have nots almost, you know, when it comes to like people that have a good relationship with Apple, they get their sheet featured all the time. People that don't and just kind of like fly under the radar. If they don't make enough noise, like pre-launch for Apple, someone in Apple editorial, like see it on like Touch Arcade or, you know, like somewhere else. So I kind of think that with the launch of these, like both of these subscription services, that the days of like buying a premium game, like a buy once game, I think that's that's over with Apple Arcade. Like completely donezo. Unless like your name is Minecraft or something like that, you know?
I think it'll be interesting to see, because we forgot to mention this earlier, but you know, every year during the new iPhone keynotes, they always demonstrate how awesome and powerful their new phones are by showing a game, because games just by nature are visually impressive things and show how powerful hardware is. They actually did do that this year outside of the Apple Arcade demos. They demoed that game Pascal's Wager, which is from a Chinese developer called Giant Games, I think. And that's, I don't know, an action RPG, very console-ish looking game, like maybe something like Dark Souls or Bloodborne or something like that.
Right.
But yeah, it seems cool enough, and it's actually going to be, I just assumed it'd be a free-to-play game, but I think it's a paid game. And so it was interesting to me that they're like kind of hyping up this paid game that's coming out.
I think it's
because
they don't know what to do about all of that, right?
So I don't know if that's them signaling like, hey, you don't have to be on Apple Arcade to be a success. You can still do what you've always done or whatever, and we'll still support that, or we'll still feature you in the App Store, or I don't know.
It's just like, it's one of those things, like, and I've talked to a lot of developers about this with like Game Club stuff that are like so happy to like be on board, because it's like, dude, when you've got something like Apple Arcade that's like going to be heavily like have its own tab in the App Store for $5, like how silly does your game look when you're launching it for even like $2.99 or whatever comparatively? It's like, all right, do you want one game for $3, or do you want to be able to play like a hundreds of millions of dollars worth of like game development budgets for $5,
right?
You know, and like a lot of people have kind of like tried to make the argument that I've seen this kind of like an anti Apple Arcade slash Game Club thing is like, well, I like to buy my games.
Yeah.
I don't want to rent them. I want to own them, kind of thing, which like, sure. Like, I'm sure there's people out there that think that, but like that is such an extreme minority. It's like insane.
Well, not only is it an extreme minority, is I think you're fooling yourself. And if you're ever buying a digital piece of software, to think that you're buying it, because they're all rentals in the end. How many games have we bought over the years that are unplayable and gone now because they weren't 64-bit? And not just free-to-play games, games you spent good money on. What about BioShock? That was out for like a month and then pulled and disappeared forever. And it was like $10 or something. So
I had a conversation on Twitter with someone that was like really mad that the Game Club games you couldn't buy individually. You had to get them through a subscription.
Right.
And it was one of those conversations where I was like, oh man, like I don't even want to get into this with this guy, because I know there's nothing I can say to make him not angry. But like, you know, when I kind of laid out the fact, I was like, well, you know, you say you want to like own games and not rent them, but when you think about it, like with the way that like iOS stuff works and how the iOS as an operating system marches forward and drops compatibility and all this stuff, like you might think you're buying something, but really you're just renting being able to use it until it breaks.
Yeah.
So how is that any worse than paying for a subscription where the people running the subscription are committing to updating all these games, keeping them running and stuff, you know?
I think if you're not buying something that's on a physical media, like a disc or a cartridge, then essentially you should be open to the fact that it might not work someday and you might lose it, and that you don't actually own it.
Right.
And I think like legally, technically, you probably don't own it either, because you're usually only buying the rights to like use that as it's, you know, still on the store or whatever. It's like you're still not owning it, even if you just buy it once. So it's kind of a weird argument. And I remember when we leased our car a few years ago, and talking to the sales girl that was helping us, and she was like, yeah, I just lease a car and I get a new one every 3 years when my lease is up, and that's it. Because in my mind, I'm just always going to have a car payment, and mm-hmm. that's fine. And you know what I mean? I'll always have the newest car, or, you know, my car will never be more than 3 years old or whatever. And it's fun to upgrade, and it's fun to get a new one. And yeah, it's not mine. I don't own it, but I'm paying a car payment anyway that I'd be paying for years and years to pay off another car.
Yeah.
And so I might as well just keep rotating in and out these new cars and, you know, just deal with it as like a cost of life, you know, monthly payment. And you can kind of look at that in the same way as like games too, where it's like, yeah, I can buy a $60 Xbox game, or I can pay $10 a month for a Game Pass and be playing tons and tons of games constantly all the time. Some of them come, some of them go, whatever. Right. But I enjoy them while they're around and am constantly upgrading to new games without having to pay more. That just makes sense to me. I get why people are against the subscription thing, but I also think you're fooling yourself if you think just a traditional pay once game is somehow you own it more or something like that.
Yeah. The other thing that I found out too, like kind of like engaging with like our haters more or less, is that like mm-hmm. when you ask them like, oh, all right, well, like, so you're not into Game Club, but like, have you tried like Xbox Game Pass or like Origin yeah. Access or anything? Like, no, of course not.
Yeah.
Which like, I don't know, man. Like I was kind of like wishy-washy on like the game subscription thing is an idea until like I don't remember which I got first, either Origin Access or Game Pass, and I was like, this is fucking it, this is amazing. Yeah. Like yeah. I don't want to buy games yeah. anymore, like this is yeah. how I want to get them.
Yeah.
So
I don't know, it's somebody who used to spend their lunch hour going to Best Buy or Fry's and just being bored and wanting new games to play, and then I'd walk mm-hmm. out $200 poorer to have a few new games that I may or may not like, and if I didn't, the trade-in was terrible or whatever. It was just never good.
Yeah.
Like I'd rather just look at like gaming as a cost of living service, entertainment service like Netflix or something like that. And, you know, there's something to be said for going back and playing a game like, you know, all the games that got released on Switch, the SNES games, like I'm playing Mario World again for the 30 billionth time. And yeah, it's fun or whatever. And so sometimes maybe you won't be able to do that with digital games or something like that. But I don't know. I've always, especially in the world of mobile, I've always been like the buy something to play it and right. don't expect right. that you'll be able to play it tomorrow.
Yeah. Like don't be
play
a collector.
And enjoy it now and then move on.
Yeah.
Because you never know what's going to happen. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's a weird thing.
Yeah. So,
but anyway, you guys are launching this fall. I bet we'll have a date someday soon.
Pretty soon. It's just like there's so many moving parts when we have like something this big going. So
September 19th, a pretty good date.
Yeah.
Launch on that day.
Yeah, we'll see. But I don't know. Like, cool. I just like hopefully another big thing like that that not a lot of people really picked up on the press release that we put out is that we are making it so if you ever bought any of these games in the past.
Oh yeah.
You get them just for free. Like they're just unlocked yeah. and playable and everything else. Like,
yeah.
And that comes with a kind of a caveat in that like we're updating the original App Store bundle IDs. So yeah. like if and so in order for that to have worked, like the game basically never could have iCloud in it, because once something has iCloud in it, you can't transfer it to a different seller account.
Seems so weird.
So yeah, it's just a weird Apple restriction, but so anything that didn't have iCloud should just automatically work. And anything that did have iCloud, we haven't really figured out like how we're going to handle this yet. But like, if you just can provide any kind of proof that you bought the game before, we can just like unlock yeah. it on your account and
yeah,
you know,
go yeah.
that route. But like,
yeah,
because that's been like the one thing that like the in my opinion, pretty valid thing that our haters have had to say is that like, oh, what the fuck? Like, I don't want to subscribe to play this game that I already paid for and all this stuff, yeah. which like I get yeah. it, that's it's valid, but like
yeah,
consider like we've spent a lot of fucking money and time updating all these games,
yeah.
so like
yeah.
if you're getting it for free, I hope that people stick around and like at least check out the other shit that we have and consider subscribing yeah. and stuff.
I think you'll learn a lot of goodwill doing stuff like that, and especially when people who aren't following the beat by beat of mobile, or maybe don't even know about Game Club or whatever, can just randomly see a game they loved back in the day mm-hmm. return
right
and working again and be like, what is this magic? I just got this random free update for a game that didn't work anymore.
Yeah, we're hoping for
stuff and want to look into it more.
We're hoping for a lot of love from Apple on like the best new update stuff, which we'll see.
Yeah. 'Cause
I think that would be a pretty cool kind of like user flow is like, best new updates, like, oh, Sword of Fargo. Shit, I remember I bought this game a million years ago. Whoa, I just have like the cloud icon to download this again. That's cool. What's going on with this? Like that seems to like be something that could like both surprise and delight people.
Yeah.
Which is always a good place to be, I think. So
Apple can be like, remember all your favorite games we broke? Well, somebody fixed them.
Yeah. I guess. So we'll see. Yeah. We'll see how it all plays out. I'm pretty hopeful.
Well, it's awesome. Worth checking out the trailer. Worth checking out GameClub.io, getting signed up for all the early access stuff, playing the beta versions for free, which, man, there's 38 games now or something like that. It's like a lot of number. Yeah. High number of games. My folder is bursting at the seams.
Too many.
But, yeah, Game Club is a great service. Apple Arcade, I think, is going to be a big hit. I think we're heading into bold new territory with where mobile gaming is going. So yeah. I think this next coming year is going to be a real interesting one.
It certainly will be. So I guess just last thing, if any developers are interested in getting in Game Club, shoot me an email.
Pointing out that while your main hook is you're resurrecting these old games, you also want to eventually publish new games and original games and stuff like that too. So
yeah,
it's worth reaching out to you about right now too, would you say?
Got some cool stuff in the works that's kind of sussing out how we're gonna work on. But let's just say Game Club is not only gonna be old games.
Take that, so. Apple Arcade.
Well, I mean, it'll complement our life. Like everything, the Game Club library is gonna be very cohesive, much like the Apple Arcade library is all I can say. So
yeah. Awesome stuff. Love Game Club. I think this ended up being an XXL episode on accident.
iPhone announcement week.
A lot of stuff to talk about. Like so. I said, if you are going to be getting a new iPhone or you have any strong opinions you want to share with us or whatever, podcast@touchercade.com is how you can send us an email. Or if you just want to share anything with us, really, funny jokes or I don't care what. I just like getting emails. As we mentioned, TouchArcade.com is primarily supported through its readers and viewers of this podcast and listeners. We do that through Patreon. So if you like what we do and want to keep continuing to see us do it, then please check out patreon.com/TouchArcade. Consider donating for as little as $1 a month. You'll get an exclusive video version of this podcast, which is super awesome, cool. And we share super exclusive stuff before we actually record the audio version of the podcast. Spoiler alert, you can see pictures of my baby.
Sometimes a show and tell.
Yeah, I need to do some sort of pumping up the Patreon here pretty quick because we've been in a decline for the last few months, which is sad. We're still doing okay, and we're still getting some new Patreons here and there, but it's definitely lost a lot of its momentum the last few months. But I'm working on some kind of big feature things for Apple Arcade that I'm hoping will be of value to people. And maybe that'll be the time to pump the Patreon a little bit. Besides that, you can help us out by doing your Amazon shopping at TouchArcade.com/Amazon. And, of course, just letting people know that Touch Arcade is the place to go to find cool mobile games. Word of mouth definitely helps a lot. With all that stuff out of the way, I think we'll wrap this one up. And we will see you again on another episode of the Touch Arcade Show next week.
Hell yeah.